So, we're going to do a little practice. So how about if you find somebody you don't know, haven't spoken with, and partner up with them. Not in the last little while. Okay, so who's going to go first and who's going to go second? Okay, so the person who's going to go first is going to talk about where you are now. How's that for open-ended? Where you are now? What's going on? What have you seen? And your partner is going to draw you out and clarify what it is that you're saying.
And reflect.
They can reflect too?
Yes. Full facilitation skills.
Oh my gosh. You can do it all.
Can we do record both sides?
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. Is that okay with everybody? Record both sides? Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Just a minute here. We're going to... All right. So, are you ready?
Not quite.
Not quite? Oh, good. Thank you.
I just want to make sure I have this clear.
Uh-huh.
So, person number two is going...
Are you one or two?
I'm two.
You're going to reflect, draw out, and clarify.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, got it? All right, if you would begin, please, number one.
I am. It's
I felt that way with two-handed recordings, and this was just like the first time I did the two-handed. I was like, oh my god, this is like, I love reflecting myself in the recorder.
Yeah, yeah.
There is, I love it.
Yeah. So it's like, it felt like the first time. It's so much of you reflecting yourself in the recorder. It felt fresh, it felt new, it felt fun.
Yeah, definitely. So that came up for me, and then when I was just back doing a recording, I was thinking about today when we did the second, when we did the thing with the partner, and I really thought that the directions I had given my partner, that I was going to have to be brought up to the front of the room and be like, this is an example of someone who is so clear. She gave such incredible directions. When I saw my partner's thing and she didn't get any of it, I was like, what?
All right, thank you, partner. Now, yes, I want to ask you how that was. I really do. But I've also heard a rumor that there are a number of people who didn't get to speak this afternoon who were told tonight would be their time. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah? I have no idea who you are, of course. Who are you?
And also there were a couple of questions posted on the notice board.
couple of questions posted on the notice board.
And if you are one of those people who was told that you could ask the question in group tonight.
So if you got a response saying, what, how about if you ask about that in group tonight?
That would be it.
That would be good now, too.
And if you have any questions about how to draw out and clarify.
As long as it takes, by golly, huh? Paul, did I see that you were one of those people?
I wasn't one of those people. Thanks for bringing up to my cousin. I was wondering, but I'm kind of like solved with the question now, but I was wondering how to do the practitioner part in. But I think that's kind of, I see it as an evolving thing now. I think it's kind of, when it comes up and comes out, it comes up and comes out. You know, it's, you just have to keep working with it, I think.
Yeah, well, to me, the primary role of the practitioner is to facilitate the process. So if you realize somebody's struggling with something, somebody's got is feeling ignored, or somebody's excited about something, or whatever, then it's the practitioner's role to pick up the recorder and position that person to be received in unconditional love and acceptance, which is what the mentoring presence is going to bring to that person. Yeah. So rather than needing to play any real role of being any particular thing, it would kind of be the equivalent of, you know, if somebody inside, say, is really upset about something, saying, well, you know, it might be helpful to talk to somebody. And then you turn on the recorder. Yeah. So we don't, as practitioners, we keep the commitments, we show up, we facilitate the process of awakening for the struggling human who isn't able to do that for him or herself. Yeah, Justin. And now I'm trusting you people. You are the ones, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yes. So something that keeps coming up for me in this retreat of communication is a lot of the suffering that takes place with the communication is the relationship this person has with his phone. And it's just something that keeps dropping in over and over and over. And it's tough. But one of the core messages that I received 2 days ago is the need to be heard and the need for validation. And being on the retreat and being away from the phone let me really see how much conditioning takes place around the phone. Because here this person is with this device that anyone can reach them at any time, and conditioning takes that and says, everyone should be trying to talk to you at all times, which is obviously not what's gonna happen.
So it's not that they could; it's that there's a desire that they do.
That's what conditioning says, but as this is being reflected, I realize that that's kind of absurd. I don't want to talk to everyone all the time.
You just want them to want to talk to you. I think that's normal, Justin.
Right, but there is that. There is the level of, you know, you pick up the phone, no one's trying to talk to you, and then conditioning is just blah blah blah. You know, no one wants to talk to you. The level of self-hate, you're not heard, and those messages. And I didn't even see that until we're on this retreat, and we get to put the phone away for whatever 3-4 days, and it. I mean, it feels great, too. It totally feels like you shed something.
Yeah. Well, and when that, when you get your phone back, and that sort of thing starts up, you have the opportunity to record about it. Mm-hmm. Because there's somebody who wants to feel heard and attended to and seen and all of those kinds of things, and you are the one, you're actually the only one who can offer him that. Mm-hmm. So it in a way, those, in a really important way, those things that ego or conditioning does to torture us can be used to our benefit if they remind us not to go into the story of, well, nobody cares about you, then nobody's even called you for the last whatever period of time. Instead of going with that and feeling bad, which is what you're supposed to do, if that's a, oh, right, I want to check in on him. I want to find out how he's doing. It's time for a conversation. And you pick up your recorder and you talk to him about what's going on with him, and you listen to him, and see if that begins to alter what that those hateful messages are trying to do to him.
Okay, so using the conditioning as part of the practice, and,
right.
and when that message is coming in and you bring that into awareness, then, well, that's a great cue to pick up the recorder and,
exactly.
and talk to the only person that can give this person that.
Exactly. Yeah. Because ego is always saying the opposite of what is so. Right? So if there's a feeling of connection, say, that you have, you're actually in a place of sort of well-being. That's the time that ego is going to come in with, well, nobody mm-hmm. wants to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Okay? Then suddenly we have a problem that we didn't have before.
Right.
So if we use what it uses against us for us, mm-hmm. so it's turning things around, we learn to turn things around.
Yes.
Were you one of them?
I'm not one of them.
You're
people,
not one of
no.
them. Is Joni one of them?
Yes, and Scott, I believe.
And Scott and Kate.
Yes.
Okay. Joni, Scott, then Kate.
Okay, two things. The first is...
I'll be back, Risa.
And they kind of go together. The original question had to do with the recording and listening question. Okay. I do want to acknowledge, though, that this new approach, or this reflecting, having a practitioner facilitating Joni, this human being, with the mentor, is great. I'm enjoying it a lot more and getting a lot more out of it than I have with traditional recording and listening. I think it's what I'm realizing is because when I'm with the practitioner's reflecting and clarifying, I feel heard, and the mentor, I feel like the mentor's like right there somehow.
Yes.
So I feel the compassion, and it feels so positive. It just, that extra piece just really, you know, and I'm having this great laughing conversation with myself. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm.
The point that that you're making that I want to underline is that having the role of the practitioner identified so clearly can help us sidestep egos attempting to be the facilitator. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I think that's really... for me, has made a huge difference. The question I originally had around recording listening, which is still a question, you have to tell me what you think about this. I'm doing a brain twerk when we hold the recorder in the right hand, and Joni talks about, you know, blah blah blah, miserable, whatever, blah blah. And then the left hand...
blah, 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 miserable, blah, 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 blah. We can all relate.
But if there's ego stuff, then it's usually you. And then the left hand, you know, then the left hand listening to it. Okay, and then I respond to the left hand, my mentor responds. And what I'm not clear about is, I think this is where I've been resisting, Do I listen after the mentor has responded? Do I listen to the whole thing all over again?
If you want to.
Do I listen to just the mentor?
If you want to.
Do I need? Can I listen to neither one after the mentor responds? I mean, no, I don't mind listening to the mentor. That's great. It's just I think I was getting dragged down by, you know, having to listen.
Well, you see, though, that's the important thing. Who would get dragged down by having to listen to her? It's not a trick question, actually. The answer is ego.
Well, yes, and well, I mean, when I'm... Okay, the mentor, my mentor has just responded. It's all good. Mm-hmm. And now I have to go back and listen. I love, no problem listening to my mentor respond. But sometimes I go on, you know, ego... Identified Joni can go on for 10 minutes before the mentor responds.
Yep.
And to have to listen to all the 10 minutes of...
Now, once again, I'm gonna go back to this, okay? What's having that reaction is ego. Hmm. Because wisdom, love, and compassion is not going to have that. I mean, that's a suffering human being. So that's what happened to us. Oh, God, I'm so sick of her. Oh, God, do I have to listen to her one more time? Oh, my God.
And I'm confused because I've heard on radio shows and others that you've said don't listen to recordings that
of self-hate. I don't think I've ever said, don't listen to recordings of a human being. If I did, I was having a bad moment. Delete that. Yeah. So if self-hate gets hold of the recorder, then as soon as we realize that's what's going on, we hit delete. But somebody suffering, I mean, that's, you know... If you've ever listened to yourself or if you've ever had a good friend or that sort of thing, we as human beings tend to tell the same story more than once. Yeah. And most people tell the story over and over because nobody listens to them. Okay, we're not hearing ourselves. Nobody else is hearing us, and we're going to just keep saying it until somebody hears us, right? And so that's the role that we're playing with this human being.
And the practitioner, shifting it to now this new information, the practitioner, is it a kindness for the practitioner when reflecting back to say, this is version number 223 of the same story?
Well, again, why would anybody do that? Why would anybody want to do that? I mean, how would you like to be the person that somebody said that to? So again, you know, the thing is, we're not going anywhere. Okay? We're not getting anywhere. We're not accomplishing anything. Not just... That's a universal statement, okay? It's all made up that I don't have time to listen to this, or I've already heard this. Okay, well, what else are you going to be doing? Listening to this? Okay, because that's probably the alternative, right? So here's somebody who has something going on, and they're talking about it. If I can't hear that with compassion, that's on me. That's not on them.
I agree. And
I so restrained myself. That there was such a temptation to say, oh, I'm so relieved. That you agree.
Oh, well, okay.
Because the thing is, you don't need to agree. I'm pointing you to an experience that you can either choose to have or not have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what I'm not saying the practitioner or even the mentor would say it from a non-loving place. I mean,
how do you say shut up from a loving place? How do you say I don't want to hear you from a loving place? You know, you can try to whitewash this any way you want, but it's rejection.
Yeah, okay.
And the person, the problem, again, is not with the person who is being rejected. That's not the person who has a problem here. It's the one who wants to reject. That's the one who's in trouble. Because that one believes that I'm somehow above this. I have important stuff going on here. I don't have time to listen to you whine about your pitiful little life. Okay? Now that's not where we want to be coming from. So if we give that the wisdom, love, and compassion test, it fails it.
Thank you.
Sherry, may I add one thing about the four steps of the way we encourage people to do it? If you're not doing it in the way you're just talking about, in practicing with however you listen to it, the reason we want to do the fourth step, make sure that we don't end the recording by just the mentor speaking, is that the only way you can own the projection that this is with the wisdom, love, and compassion is this, is to witness it. If that's one of the four processes, so if you're practicing it just as you practice scales, then those are the four processes you want to practice.
Yes, yeah. And I think the stumbling block here is I don't want to go back to and listen to step one again.
Yeah.
I'm happy to listen to step three and four.
Right.
But
I just wanted to make that clear. That
we want to get all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I just ask a question about this?
Okay.
I'm not trying
but
to
But if there's, you know, it, if there's a part of the seven, they're going to...
With the fourth step.
Listening to the whole thing. Listening to the mentor.
Oh, yeah. So it's we record it, that person record. The practitioner is the one that picks up the recorder first.
Yes.
Place. All right. The person records it that's having...
Whatever
wants to
they're
say,
having.
Wants to say. And then the practitioner
listens.
Mm-hmm. And then the mentor records...
Yes, and you know, the mentor might not have anything to say.
Right.
So then you just have a blank spot.
But usually there's something the mentor might want to say. Oh, I see. And then you listen to what the mentor has to say.
Yes.
That's the four steps.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Somehow I wasn't
following. And there are no rules here.
Right.
Okay, it's not, we're not ticking things off. So that's the point I'm trying to make here. It's a relationship.
Right.
Right? I mean, you're trying to save a suffering human being. You know, not get the steps down.
Okay, I got the clarification I need. I hear what you're saying. I actually have, if listening just to my mentor is what gives me joy and what gives me the most support, that's...
Here's the thing. This is just a crushing piece of news for most human beings. But it's not about me. Okay? It's not about the me.
Now, I'm talking about Jonah. I'm talking about this human being.
Yes. But that's not the one who's suffering. So there's the authentic human being who is struggling over something.
Yes.
Okay? That's who we're saving.
Yes.
So it's not about me arranging life so that I feel good. Everybody, that's why people want to buy islands. Okay? It's not a mystery that everybody is trying to get to a place of feeling good. This is service. Okay? So if I don't feel all that swell on my way to offering assistance to somebody who is struggling, that's okay. And what we are eventually moving toward, I think, I hope, is to being people who have the joy in that service, not in getting what we want so that we feel good. The feeling good comes from the giving, from the being present, from the offering, from the being there, from the caring. That's where the joy comes from.
The person who's struggling should have the choice, no? I when I'm struggling, when I'm identified with ego, I'm struggling. And I don't want to be identified with ego. I want to stop that. And so listening to the mentor stops that.
Okay. Okay.
And sometimes I'll listen to the whole thing.
Pardon me?
And sometimes I'll listen to the whole thing.
Great.
I just need a clarification. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Well, just for the record, you didn't get it. You did not get clarification. So do not leave here thinking that you and I are in agreement about what we're saying, because we are not. Now, the only reason that that's important is that I'm protecting my reputation. So
I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah. When somebody comes back and says, well, but you told Joni that all you really need to do is listen to your mentor. I have to say, no, I didn't say that.
And I'm not saying that either.
Good. Scott.
Well, in that process of service, what I was just seeing is the tremendous support we have to be in that process of service. So the exercises that we did...
Can everybody hear?
The exercises that we did this afternoon were brilliant. I mean, we just did facilitator training with everybody on the spot in an experiential way. And one of the things I was enjoying was seeing that the attention seems to want to be here in presence, in love, in kindness. And it just needs a little support.
Yes.
And
to overcome a habit.
To overcome a habit.
Yeah.
And so something actually relatively simple, like reflecting, drawing out, and clarifying. One, if I'm practicing being the facilitator, you really have to listen. So the attention has to be directed to the listening.
Which is the best part of it, isn't it?
It is so great. And if you're practicing something maybe that you haven't done before, maybe you have done before, like, I really want to practice drawing out and clarifying in this interaction. Well, I don't know what they're going to say or how this is going to go. So I have to practice expanding the awareness so that I can drop in when that's going to happen.
Yes. Yes. And in that expanded awareness, we get the very best of awareness practice.
Yeah.
Because that expanded awareness includes you, right?
Yeah.
So if there's just laser focus on you, right? And there I am, laser focused on you, and I have no idea what's going on here at all. That's not helpful.
Yeah.
Well, it's technically not helpful for you either, but it's especially not helpful for me, right? And so to have that expanded awareness that includes this and this And then, of course, if we get really lucky, we have that expanded awareness that includes far more than just this and this, right? And not only can you not afford to be anywhere else, right? Because it's going to be, it's going to get ugly if you wander off, right? But you don't want to be anywhere else.
No, you don't.
In fact, it's the only thing you ever want to do.
Exactly. I mean, I think we've been talking about why you encourage people to facilitate. And the brilliant thing is we can all do that.
Yes.
And that's what we're learning to do. I mean, we did it with external people, mm-hmm. but we are now practicing it internally. Mm-hmm. And then the other awesome thing is on the other side, if you're the one being drawn out and clarified, then essentially the attention is being directed.
Yes.
You're being drawn out of the conversation in the head, I think it says in the book, to a non-threatening you. That's
yes.
the essence of the facilitation.
Yes.
So on both sides, the attention is being directed to here, to presence. Like
yes.
everybody wins.
Yes.
And if you can do that internally,
yes.
holy cow, it's unstoppable.
Yes. 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 And again, why would you ever want to be anywhere else?
Exactly. And then you have the practitioner reminding you to do it, to show up.
Yes.
Both sides.
Yes. Yes. Which is the is critical, right? Because we have a habit of wandering off. We have a habit of going unconscious.
Yes.
And there's the practitioner. Practitioner is the one who keeps the schedule, keeps the commitments, keeps the remembers that, oh, well, time to record and listen, time to meditate, time to, okay, here we go. And so there's that support. And, of course, as you say, everyone is benefiting.
Yeah, and there's the service.
Yes.
For everybody, including
yes.
this person.
Yeah. Yeah. Kate.
So my question is about...
And you have to speak up.
Okay. My question is about... So here we are facilitating each other. We know what's coming. But what about the real world?
We call it the other world.
Because here we know I'm... You know, I expect to be facilitated or reflected. But I have found myself in situations in the other world where I start doing that and it really pisses someone off.
Yes, yes, it can.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know why it ticks people off?
Well, first I didn't ask their permission, probably.
Well... Ego doesn't like it.
Their ego. Or my ego.
Yeah, their ego.
Mm-hmm.
That really doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? First of all, it tends to make them conscious. And that is often not popular. Right? What people want to do is just talk to you. Just tell you. Don't interrupt me,
mm-hmm.
and especially don't make me aware of what I'm saying. Because I don't want to listen to what I'm saying. I don't want to know what I'm saying. Yeah? And of course, if you ask somebody about that, they would say, no, that's not what's going on with me at all. But it is. And so you learn to be very stealth about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that eventually people don't know that you're reflecting them. But you are. Okay, and increasingly they become aware of what they're saying. And you know, now of course I'm a hard nose, okay? I don't have to probably explain that to most of you. If I'm in a conversation with somebody and they don't want me to hear them, why are we here? Right? Because that's all the reflecting is doing. I'm really attending to you. I really am listening to you. I really want to hear what you have to say. If you find that annoying, I'm going to find somebody else to talk to. Now, if the relationship is really important to you and it ticks them off, if you reflect them, then you might choose not to do that. But I suspect that it won't be long before the exchanges will become increasingly undesirable.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you'll know is the person is unconscious. Can you get a sense of that?
Oh, yeah. I also think that the cases where it's ticked somebody off is because I wasn't skillful enough. In the sense that one thing somebody said earlier today was that they were the facilitator and they realized it wasn't about them. It was about, obviously, the person who they were facilitating. And I can see how I wasn't that skillful yet. And I was so worried about doing it. It was really about me.
Yeah.
So yes. I think it's a little bit more skill.
Well, and you can be honest about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm working on communication. And one of the things that I'm trying to do is stay really present and be able to listen to people when they're talking. So I would like to practice on you. And so, you know, I want to stop you periodically and tell you what I think I heard and see if that's accurate and ask you questions to make sure that I'm tracking with you. And again, if somebody says, no, I don't want you to do that, got to go, huh, okay, well, gosh. Yeah. But most people... with that kind of explanation, that what's motivating you is that you really want to give 1,000% of your attention to them as they're talking so that you're really clear about what it is that they're saying, gee, that's got to be kind of a compliment. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can always join the Reflective Listening Buddies program to, you know, tune up your
skills. Yeah, I have done that.
Oh, well.
But this was, I guess, before I did that.
Yeah. Yes, what?
May I offer my favorite tip from the book about that?
Sure.
Is to reflect in your head.
Reflect in your head.
Because the only thing I'm trying to do in reflecting, other than being attentive and listening, is to get out of the ego in me.
Uh-huh. Get out of the conversation in your head. So if that's right, in the book, it's people who are in relationships where they're afraid to reflect. How intense is that? Mm-hmm. You're in a relationship, and you're afraid to reflect the person. Mm-hmm. Now, see, that's one where I would suggest...
so that if, especially in those intense situations of energy where I know I'm getting triggered, that if I can't reflect aloud because I'm afraid or something,
I'm triggered
yeah. And I am going to go to that place, then just saying what the other person is saying in my head allows me to not move away from center.
Yeah, because it takes all of your focus
attention.
To be able to do that.
And it puts it on, as Scott was saying, all the attention goes to being present. It does not go to ego in me getting triggered.
Yeah.
So I won't come back at the person in the dynamic that's going to cause that dance to be what it always is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because you can only attend to one thing at a time. So if you're in there busy reflecting, then stories can't be built up.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very good.
I just had... So you mentioned stealth. And it seems to me, because I was looking at this same question, the same situation... That
so I was talking about stealth,
yeah.
And Phil was looking at the same kind of situation.
So it seems to me that the drawing out and clarifying is kind of part of the stealth, in that you throw that into reflecting
to throw them off.
Well, I mean,
they don't know.
It starts sounding a little more like a conversation.
Yeah. And unless somebody is really present, they don't realize that you're actually saying what they just said, because it's a question.
Right, and then you're adding a little bit of, well, tell me more, or, you know. So that was the one thing that I was looking at and seeing. The other thing is, you know, that whole thing about not reflecting self-hate. And
not reflecting self-hate.
And that's a little
topic.
I find, like, there's a couple of people that in my life that either are throwing self-hate at me or are feeling it towards them. You know, like if somebody says, that, oh, I'm just so stupid. Now, we learn in reflective listening, but it's, of course, never to reflect that.
So it's, can't tell if you can hear, but if somebody says something like, I'm so stupid, we're encouraged not to reflect that.
But in actual real life, it's like the other person doesn't know they're not supposed to say, you know, do self-hate. And so then it's like, I was thinking, well, we could say, we don't do this in reflective listening buddies, but we could say, well, it sounds like you feel like, and that's kind of putting, you know, that you're feeling stupid. You know, that's like,
well, and
what do you do in that?
I'm not sure that we need to carry this to the point of kind of paralysis. You know, so if somebody says, oh, God, I'm so stupid, where would be the harm in saying something like, gosh, that's not my experience of you?
Right, just to be regular at that point.
Yeah, kind of just go all normal on her.
It's just that sometimes there'll be in these stories that go on and on, and then it's like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I just want to hang up, or usually on the phone.
Uh-huh.
So, I was just looking at that.
Well, and you know, there's no problem with that either. So somebody is launched into a great long tale of self-hatred, or it sounds like you-hatred is part of it. I don't think we're obligated to stay in those conversations.
Right.
Gosh, you know, I have something on the stove.
Well,
hopefully you will. If not, you can just slide over and put something right before you say it.
Because that's what I do now. I just find a way to get out of the whole conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just double checking that that's, we don't have to go with that.
No. It's not kind.
Yeah.
You know, it's really not. It's not, and it's not kind to somebody else.
Right.
You know, if somebody is feeling abusive and they're looking for a target, let them be on their own. You know, you don't have to help them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I like what Ashwini was saying, where I could, in that instance, just kind of be reflecting inside.
Yeah, if you choose to. Yeah. But again, I think we have to be careful in our assumptions, you know, that it's somehow beneficial to someone to encourage them in that kind of conversation. Whether it's directed toward themselves or toward you. How could that be? How could that be beneficial?
No, it's not. It's not at all.
Yeah. So it's very much socially accepted, but that doesn't necessarily make it wise or compassionate or kind or helpful. Mm-hmm. Who else? Is Jodine one of our seven?
No.
Oh, well, you hang on.
I'm one of the seven.
You're one of the seven?
I'm one of the seven,
Oh, Carol.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, what's going on? Let's see. So we've all been facilitating each other about our direct experience. So we've been talking also about situations where it doesn't make sense to facilitate, you know, to get your pot off the stove or whatever. And I have this brother and that we talk on the phone because we live in different places. And I don't want to facilitate him because he's obsessing. So if we're having a conversation, he's talking about his wife. She did this. She's having an affair. She this. And so I don't want to facilitate that or reflect that.
Uh-huh. But you do want to talk with him? You do
right.
want
to? Yes, I care for him. And so sometimes I say, I don't want to talk about her, you know, what's going on with you? And then there'll be a couple sentences, and then, but she.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just, and then sometimes I'll say, okay, you know, I said you can have 10 minutes to talk about the subject, but I don't really want to do that anymore because I don't want to hear about it.
And he's fine with that. You have a relationship that allows you to say that kind of thing, and he doesn't get offended or upset or...
Oh, no, he goes, yeah, I know the 10 minutes, but then he goes on.
And can you stay in that level of levity? I mean, you both know what he's doing. He knows you don't want to talk about it. You know he knows. All you're doing, I mean, you're holding the phones,
yeah.
Right? So there's the connection. That's really kind of all you're trying to do, right? Is stay
yeah,
connected.
I don't want to hear all that, you know.
Right.
Reflecting it would damage everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Although, you know, Carol, it could be really interesting to reflect it and see if him hearing himself would alter his desire to do that. Because
he did that the first time he started talking about his wife's affairs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those that we were just referring to, where he might have no idea the kinds of things he's saying or how that sounds or what that's like for you to hear it. But to have it reflected back, he has to hear what he's saying. Because, I mean, we all know that place, right? You're upset about something, and you just, and you really have kind of a general idea of what you're talking about. But mostly, it's the emotion that is just coming out.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know if that's the case with him, if he knows what he's saying or not, but he's been saying it for so long. I think he might know.
Well, that would be an argument for reflecting it at least once.
Right, it's not going to, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And then if
and
not...
then I can be open and say, this is what I'm doing, and I tried it, and it's not working, and I love you.
Right, yeah, or you don't even have to probably tell him if it's not working. But it would work. And the thing that it would do for you... with what Ashwini was saying, it would take you out of what's going on in your head while that's happening. I don't want to hear this, and why does he do it, and blah, 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 and I don't want to talk about her. I mean, that's a kind of an unfortunate conversation that's going on in your head.
Uh-huh.
And so if you were reflecting him, first of all, that wouldn't be happening. If you just did the reflect inside your own head, because you're committed to staying on the phone with him because he's your brother and you love him, either way, you're saved from that internal negativity.
Yeah, I'm saved from the... I think I understand what you're saying, but ego's negativity in my head, all
yes.
my judgments and everything.
Yes.
And on the other hand, he's saying hateful things. So then I'm, in my head, I'm reflecting the hateful things that he's saying, isn't it?
Well, it's probably not going to be a problem if you say, and he's saying, because, I mean, you know he's saying it. You're either focusing on you saying it, which is what diverts the attention,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're either focused on that, or you're just hearing it. Unless you just put the phone down. And do the walk into the other room and put something on the stove.
I have a pot on at all times. You're saying I should reflect it next time we talk if he starts talking about that.
Yeah, why not?
2 hours or 10 minutes or...
What was the question?
Oh, I was asking for 2 hours or 10 minutes because he can go on for a long time.
Well, see, I don't know why you people do this. I don't know anybody I would talk to for 2 hours on the phone. I've never known anybody I would talk to for 2 hours on the phone.
That would be, yes.
I'm not capable of that much love. Yeah, I mean, set the timer. You know, I mean, it sounds like I'm kidding, but there's a lot of seriousness in this. I mean, why would you put yourself through that? I just, I don't know, maybe I have just a different definition of love, but I love you. I'm not listening to this anymore.
Yeah, well, that's what I said.
Goodbye, darling.
That's what I said.
Don't forget I love you. I'm going to go take a nice hot bath now. I'll be loving you.
Now, I'm confused because you just said, if I remember, you just said to facilitate him, and on the other hand, you just kind of said a little scenario where it's...
Well, 2 hours! I was happy for you to facilitate him, but I was not saying you should facilitate him for 2 hours.
Well, tell me, shut up. You don't have to facilitate that long.
No, you have a good exit strategy. Yeah. So whatever works for you. Yeah. Who's... Marianne?
I just want to check. Ashwin,
yes.
I'm the 7.
Yes, you're on the board.
Oh, she's one of the 7.
Not right. One of the 7, but one who had a question.
On the board. Got it.
Yes, Sherry. I'm on the board for asking about the scrambler. I gave my communications book away to someone.
No.
So I can't remember how you define that and sort of what is the processes around that. And part of why I asked is because one of the processes I identified over this past year is I get confused. It's like there is whatever the topic, I can get confused, and I'm confused about the scrambler. And I just...
So 2 things. So confusion is a thing, right? And then sort of unrelated to it, but tangentially, you're confused about the scrambler. Is that?
Well, I just was kind of framing it that...
It's not the only thing you're confused about.
No, I can get confused about anything.
And are you wondering if it's the scrambler that confuses you about the other things?
Well, I hadn't thought of that.
We might be onto something.
Because it's like I couldn't understand what the scrambler is ego doing.
Wait.
It's making me go, I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so do you know my definition of confusion?
No.
Okay. Confusion is what happens to us when we look to conditioned mind for clarity. Okay, so we're right here in the moment, and we may or may not know anything or think we know anything. Okay, but we're right here. And then something happens, somebody says something occurs, whatever it is, and we go into conditioned mind to figure it out, to think about it. And as soon as we go into the world of conditioned mind, we're no longer here, and we're in scramble land.
Oh, this makes perfect sense now. Mm. Yeah.
Is there another definition in the book that I should know about?
No. We just, what we did in the book was to, just like the con artist, it was a device that we used to assist us to break down what happens when ego is in a communication interaction, right? So the example is, so someone says, would you like some dessert? This is the example from the book. The scrambler in you says, she thinks I'm fat. You can watch that happen, and I feel bad because she's asking me for dessert because she's making a comment on how I look. that's the scrambling that happens when, you know, in one
and
way,
imagine that going back and forth for three or four exchanges,
right.
And
yeah.
how people start going in opposite directions.
So the other example in the book is, will you please take the garbage out? And the scrambler goes, why do I have to take the garbage out? I'm always the one having to take the garbage out. He never takes the garbage out. And what comes out of my mouth is, do it yourself. Because
the whole that whole conversation that happened inside my head that didn't involve the other person until it got to the conclusion.
Yeah, so the simple request gets scrambled through the conditioning and the conversation to come out with a reaction that is ego speaking. Or the other example was, would you like to come to dinner? Oh my God, I have to do all that laundry and a presentation, but she's going to be so hurt that if I say no, okay. Right?
Yeah, and I have a lot of laundry to do. and a presentation to prepare for. How important is it that we go to dinner? Could we go Thursday night instead? Could we go next week? None of that happens. We just do the whole thing inside our little scrambled, conditioned brain and then reach our conclusion thinking that everybody else in the world is included in that process. Mm. And, of course, no one is, usually including us.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is something that I will be paying attention to because I think this is what actually goes on with me. I go through a lot of stuff and I never speak up and say it.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that I would.
Yeah, and if we get ourselves into that position where we're doing both sides of the conversation, only the other person is imaginary, and then we reach the conclusion that we reach in our imaginary, but we don't realize it's imaginary, and we think the other person was participating, and it really, it colors our relationships, right? Because we can't tell that we're not actually communicating.
So this is so brilliant that this tool of facilitation and clarifying and drawing out my ego has been in shock. You know, it's really, it's hard to hear. It's hard to hear it, but another part of me is going, yes, I can save now. I can save that young woman or girl who needs to be saved.
What?
So
applying these skills inside.
Mm-hmm. Instead of having those other conversations,
yeah.
I can work on the conversation with myself.
Yeah.
And it is
you're going to have to say that again because I couldn't quite hear you.
I was saying it's touched me because I know how important it is to save that person.
Yeah. How long she's been waiting.
Yeah.
And to have a sense of how long it takes us to get ready to be able to be there for that person. Mm-hmm. And that's the work you've been doing, right?
Good thing that came out of this last night, I remembered, I was in touch with this person a long time ago, and I sent her to summer camp, like a perpetual summer camp. You could live there. And I thought, oh, that's crazy, I could bring her home, she can live with me now.
Yeah. Because she didn't want to live at summer camp.
No. Even though it was, I tried to make it really nice.
Yeah. But it's what we were talking about a minute ago, right? Rejection is rejection. You can send me to the nicest camp in the world, but it still means you don't want me.
I never saw that, but yeah.
And it's understandable, right? It we can understand what happened to us and how we got to that place of when Penny was talking about the little girl on the dresser and all those children growing to adulthood with their backs to her because they were busy surviving and she was not a good survival bet. So you can't blame anyone for turning their back. But now we have the opportunity to turn around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Risa.
I'm not one of the seven, so.
Okay, well, I'm going to call on her and then I'm going to... Well, is there anybody else from this afternoon? We covered
everything. I think there was one person who had a question on repeating the human, the wisdom, love, and compassion, the model you offered us, Sherry. And just FYI, the next newsletter article will be a recording from Sherry on that. So it'll be available to everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll do a little editing on the group, and I don't have to write a newsletter article. Happiness is. All right, Risa, and then I'll ask Karen.
Okay. So I've been really enjoying having this tool of identifying projection. And today, at the end of all of this facilitation and clarification exercises, I ended up somewhere that was kind of completely different, but maybe the same. Which is that I realized that conditioning had been playing this little game on me about projection, where it had me, so I'm here hearing, okay, like no one else exists, okay. So then it had me imagining that I'm just sort of like walking through this amusement park full of like cardboard cutouts of other people, like they appear to be there, but they're not there. They're not real, which has an implication of being quite isolating because you're the only human walking around and there's all these cardboard cutouts. They're not other humans. And then I would sort of go on this like implied shame trip about, you know, not realizing inherently that like everyone's fake and don't you know you're alone anyway, which is all conditioned experience. And then,
well, story,
right?
You would say conditioned story rather than experience.
Right.
Yeah.
But then today I was seeing that in fact. If I'm not separate, then it's not that like then the image or the felt projection of being this like lone human in an abandoned amusement park full of fake people is also is not real, because then like I am with everybody. It's just like I sort of also am everybody, because it's like being a little drop in the ocean. Like you're just part of the wave instead of like this lone human, because you also don't exist, sort of the you, me, I bit.
Yeah. Okay. So try this one on, okay? We actually all do exist, but we're all your projections. Just like you're my projection. So it's not, with projection, it's not, the point is not that nobody exists. The point is that everything is your creation. So people will get hung up on, are you saying that tree is not there? And there's a way in which, yeah, that could definitely be argued. But that's not the point. The point is that what that tree is for you what that tree is. Mm-hmm. Right? So we, whatever, however you experience all of us, you know, you can just walk around with a projection exercise, you know, just come up with one word for every person, right? And then you've had, I don't know how many of us are there, 47 or something like that, views of yourself. Because you made up who that person was. And of course, to check that out, all we have to do is you project something onto somebody and then go up to them and say, don't do that, okay? But say you did. You would go up to them and say, I think you're, is that your experience? And they would very likely not agree with you. Okay. I don't know if that's helpful at all, but it's that everything gives you a view of you. That's how projection is truly helpful. Not trying to figure out whether things are real or they're not real, and you know, because there's just so many levels that we can see that. I was just talking to somebody doing my favorite pink thing. You know, every molecule in the universe is pink. Where are we? Right. Couldn't get out of the room. Yeah. All right. Karen.
Well, I was, I wanted to talk a little bit about two-handed recording using the third person. And just run this by you, because I was
two-handed recording using the third person.
I just want to tell you what I saw. I was listening to a recording today, and the person that was suffering was having such a hard time that she couldn't even, she couldn't do the recording. But there were there was someone else there that had heard, that knew all the suffering so well that she could say the whole thing. And so...
a proxy.
She could tell the entire story of what was going on for this really suffering person. And it's almost like a drawing out exercise, because the suffering person, hearing somebody that knew her story so well and could actually tell it and was asking for help for her, it drew her out, and then she could then talk about it. And it was just, it's just such a powerful thing. And So I just wanted to run that by you because I don't hear us talking about the power of that.
Well, I hear that, and it's dangerous.
Oh.
And here's the reason that it's dangerous, because it's what people are doing all the time. So people will talk about circumstances in their life as if they are the person that it happened to, and they're not. So when we start telling the I story, you know, and then this happened to me, and then this happened to me, and then this happened to me, we're going back to the people with their backs turned. Okay, so what we do is we hear from a survivor, and then we hear from the next survivor, and then we hear from the next survivor. And at a certain point, people are telling a story of all of these survivors as if they had that experience. And they didn't. And it's a way these folks stay hidden or unacknowledged or not able to tell their story, the actual, from the perspective of the person that it happened to. So I hear with the way you're doing it that it's a technique, a process to gain access to support somebody until they can speak for themselves. And that's the part that I would encourage is really important, that at a certain point, whoever is telling that story steps aside and lets that person speak for, in this case, herself.
Yeah. Well, when I first did it, that it was like, but then that person kind of started speaking.
Yeah.
That became the two-handed recording.
Yeah.
That person could. There was just something about the dynamic of it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, this was I don't know what you'd say. It was the person it happened to was too mortified. But once somebody started talking about it, didn't seem as mortifying. And then she could tell.
Yeah. Then she could talk from her experience.
So.
Yes. So, as I say, as a technique to help somebody, that's great. But it's very easy for ego to want to come in and tell the story of everybody as if it happened to me.
Okay.
So when I was 5, this happened to me. Mm-hmm. When I was 13, this happened to me. Well, actually, it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I hope, the power of this work that we're doing right now is actually letting the person who had the experience speak. That's really critical in that healing process.
Yeah, it is. That's been my experience too. If that person hadn't been able to talk, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't think that healing would have happened.
Right.
But she couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, she just needed someone to help her.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's part of the role of the practitioner.
Okay.
Right, to create that environment in which that kind of thing can happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thanks, everybody.